an Osho talk. From Darkness to Light, Responses to Questions, Number 1.
How we can save humanity from falling even more.
It is one of the trade secrets of all the religions to propose propaganda that the humanity has to be saved. It is a very strange idea, but it is so old that nobody seems to look into the implications. Nobody asks why you are worried about saving humanity. And you have been saving humanity for thousands of years. Nothing seems to be saved. In the first place, does humanity need any saving? To answer this question, all the religions have created an absolutely fictitious idea of the original fall, because unless there is a fall, the question of saving does not arise. And the religious conception of the original fall is just rubbish. Man has been evolving, not falling, in every possible way. The only way the original fall can be supported is by the idea of evolution proposed by Charles Darwin. But religions cannot use that. They are very much offended. Charles Darwin's idea certainly can be put in such a way, at least by the monkeys, if not by men, that it was an original fall. Certainly, if man has evolved out of monkeys, he must have fallen from the trees. And the monkeys who did not fall must have laughed at these idiots who had fallen. And there is a possibility that these were the weaker monkeys who could not survive on the trees. In monkeys there exists a hierarchy. Perhaps the same mind and the same hierarchy is carried by man too. It is the same mind. If you see monkeys sitting on a tree, you can know who is the chief. He will be at the top of the tree. Then will be a big group of ladies, his harem. The most beautiful young after that will be a third group . I was thinking about this third group for many days, but I had no word for it. In India we call that group the chamchas. The chamcha means a spoon. And these people are suckers. Just the way you take by a spoon things out of a bottle, they go on taking things, power, money, from those who have. Of course, they have to buttress these people. They have to praise these people. But Devraj has sent by coincidence today the right word, because chamcha cannot be exactly translated. A spoon loses all meaning. He has sent me a word which is Californian. The brown nose. And he sent me the Webster's dictionary also, because I may not understand what is a brown nose, and certainly I would not have understood what is a brown nose. And with a note also, thinking perhaps even the dictionary may not be helpful, because Webster writes it in such a way that it does not look in any way obscene. dirty. So he sent me a note also that in Europe we call these people ass kissers. That's exactly the meaning of chamcha. The chief on the top, then the harem of ladies whom he controls, then the red brown noses. And then you will come down to lower categories of the hierarchy. On the lowest branches, the poorest monkeys, without girlfriends, boyfriends, servants. But perhaps from this very group humanity has grown. Even in this group there may have been few people who were so weak that they could not even manage to stay on the lowest branches. They were pushed, pulled, thrown, and somehow they found themselves fallen on the earth. That is the original fall. Monkeys still go on laughing at men. Certainly, if you think from the monkey's side, a monkey walking on two legs . If you are a monkey and you think from a monkey's side, seeing a monkey walking on two legs, he will think, has he joined a circus or something? And what happened to the poor guy? He just lives on the ground. He never comes to the trees. The wild freedom of the trees, the higher status of the trees. This is really the fallen one, the downtrodden. Accept this. Religions don't have any logical support for the idea of the original fall. Stories they have, but stories are not arguments. Stories are not proofs. And stories can have just the opposite meaning than you wanted to give it to them. For example, the original fall in Christianity makes God the real culprit. And if anybody needs saving, it is the Christian God. A father preventing his children not to be wise, not to live forever, is certainly insane. the worst father would like his children to be wise, intelligent. The cruelest father would like his children to live forever. But God prevents man from eating two trees, the tree of knowledge and the tree of eternal life. This seems to be a strange kind of God. Not in any way possible to conceive him as fatherly. He seems to be the enemy of man. Who needs saving? Your God is jealous. That's what was the argument of the devil who came in the form of a serpent and seduced the mind of Eve. To me, there are many significant things to be understood. Why he had chosen Eve and not Adam? He could have chosen Adam directly. But man by nature are less sensitive. Less vulnerable. More arrogant. Egoistic. Adam may not have liked even to have a conversation with the serpent, may have thought it is below his dignity. And to be persuaded by serpent's arguments would have been impossible for man. He would have argued against him. He would have struggled, fought, because to agree with someone to the ego seems as if you are defeated. The ego knows only disagreement, struggle, victory or defeat. There is no other way, as if there are only two alternatives, victory and defeat. For the ego, certainly there are only two ways. But for a sensitive soul, there is only one way to understand whatever is true. It is not a question of me and you. It is not a question of somebody being defeated or victorious. The question is, what is the truth? The woman was not interested in arguing. She listened and she found that it was perfectly right. Wisdom is prohibited because the serpent said, God does not want man to become godlike. And if you are wise, you will be godlike. And once you are wise, it is not very difficult for you to find the tree of eternal life. It is really the other side of wisdom, eternity. And if you are wise and you have eternal life, then who bothers about God? What he has got that you have not got. Just to keep you a slave eternally, dependent, never allow you to become a knowing being, never allow you to taste something of the eternal. In this vast garden of Eden, he has prohibited only two trees. The argument was simply a statement of the fact. Now the person who brings the truth to humanity is condemned as devil. And the person who was preventing humanity from knowing the truth, from knowing life, is praised as God. But the priests can live only with this kind of God. The devil will destroy them completely. If God himself becomes useless, futile, by man becoming wise and having eternal life, what about the priests? What about all the religions, the churches, the temples, the synagogues? What about these millions of people who are just parasites? Sucking humanity's blood in every possible way. They can exist only with that kind of God. Naturally, the person who should be condemned as devil is praised as God. And the person who should be praised as God is condemned as devil. Just try to see the story without any prejudice. Just try to understand it from many aspects. This is only one of the aspects, but of tremendous importance, because God becomes devil, devil becomes God. Then there is no original fall. If Adam and Eve had declined devil's wise advice, that would have been the fall. And then there would have been a need to save man. But they did not decline. And the serpent was certainly wise. Certainly wiser than your God. Just see. Anybody knows. Even a very mediocre person knows. That if you say to children, don't eat that fruit, you can eat anything that is available in the house, but don't eat that fruit, the children will become absolutely disinterested in all kinds of foods. Their only interest will be in that fruit, which has been prohibited. Prohibition is invitation. The God of this story seems to be absolutely a fool. The garden was huge, millions of trees. Even if he had not said anything about these two trees, I don't think even by now man would have been able to find those two trees. But he started his religious sermons from this sermon. This is the first sermon. Don't eat from these two trees. He pointed out the trees, that these are the two trees that you have to avoid. This is provocation. Who says that the devil seduced Adam and Eve? It was God. Even without devil, I say to you, Adam and Eve would have eaten those fruits. Devil is not needed. God has done the work himself. Sooner or later, it would have been impossible to resist the temptation. Why God should prevent? All efforts to make people obedient simply lead them into disobedience. All efforts to enslave people make them more and more strong to rebel, to be free. Even Sigmund Freud knows more psychology than your God. And Sigmund Freud is a Jew. Just in the same tradition of Adam and Eve. Adam and Eve are his forefathers. But somewhere the same blood stream is flowing. Sigmund Freud is more intelligent, and in fact there is no need for much intelligence to see a simple fact. In my childhood, in my neighborhood, lived the richest man of the city. He had the only palatial building, all marble. Around his house there was a beautiful garden, lawn. Just one day I was standing outside his fence and he was telling something to his gardeners. I told him, Dada, he was known as Dada. Dada means big brother. The whole town called him Dada. Even people who were older than him, because he was rich. I said to him that you should remember one thing. Put few posters around the garden that nobody should urinate here. Because I have seen few people urinating around your house. And it was a good place to urinate because big garden, trees, you can go behind them. He said, that's right. Next day, he painted few instructions around the garden. No pissing around. And since that day, the whole town was pissing around his house. He came to see my father. He said, where is your boy? He has made my house hell. And who has said to him that he has to advise me? My father said, but what advice he has given to you? If you had asked me, I would have told, never listen to him. It always leads into some trouble. What happened? He said, nothing, just I was talking to the gardeners. He said, Dada, few people I have seen urinating. I have never seen myself. My gardeners said that we have never seen anybody. But the idea struck me that it is true. Huge trees, bushes, people may be urinating into my garden or around my garden. This is not to be allowed anymore. So he suggested me that make few posters around the house, no pissing allowed. So I did that. And since that day, the whole town is pissing around me. Where is your boy? My father said it is very difficult where he is. Whenever he comes, he comes. Whenever he goes, he goes. He is not under our control. But if he has started giving advice to you, he will come to give more advice. Don't be worried. If his one advice has worked, he will come. You just wait. And if he comes and I find him, I will bring him to you. My father caught hold of me by the evening and he said, "You come. Why you gave this advice?" I said, "My advice is to prohibit people . Nobody can say that my advice is wrong. I have seen it written in many places. And yes, it is true, I have seen people pissing there. That's how I got the idea. And I have inquired why people have started pissing. They say when we read the board, suddenly the urge, we remember that the bladder is full. Otherwise we were engaged in other kind and other thoughts were there. Who thinks of the bladder when it becomes absolutely necessary, then only one thinks. But looking at these boards, suddenly the bladder becomes the most important thing. And one feels the place is good. That's why the board has been put. People must be pissing here. And when we see there are many marks, many people have been pissed already. So we feel it is perfectly right. It is a simple thing. If you prohibit anything, you provoke, you give a challenge. In India, it is not any legal problem to urinate anywhere, wherever you can manage. Freedom of urination. When I was near about 10 or 11 year old, my father became very sick. So we had to take him to a very good hospital far away in Indore. The hospital in Indore was famous all over the country. We had to live there for 6 months. Just at the entrance of the hospital was a board. No urination permitted. Anybody disobeying will be prosecuted. And there used to stand a policeman. To me that was even more provocative. Bored was enough. But a policeman with a gun standing there. The very first day my father was entered in the hospital and we were given a quarter in the hospital to live, I could not resist. This is impossible. The board alone was enough, but to put a policeman there with a gun, this is too much. I went directly. The policeman was standing there. He looked at me. He could not believe, because this has never happened. I pissed. He said, "What are you doing? Can't you read?" I said, "I can read better than you." And he said, "Can't you see me with this gun?" I said, "I can see that too. It is because of your gun and this board. Otherwise, I had no need. My house is just 2 minutes walk from here, and I am just coming from the bathroom. It is really so difficult to piss because the bladder is empty. But I cannot avoid the temptation." He said, "You will have to come with me to the chief administrator of the hospital." It was a big hospital. So I said, "Okay, I will come." I went there. The administrator was very angry. He said, "You have just entered first day and you do such a thing?" I said, what I can do? This policeman was pissing there. He said, "What?" I said, "Yes, he was pissing there. And when I saw that a policeman is pissing there, I thought perhaps it is absolutely legal. This board is nonsense." The policeman said, "Who says I was pissing? This is absolutely wrong." The administrator said, "This is strange. Let us see." What I had done, I had pissed on two places. And I had brushed those two. And the administrator said, "Two places." He said to the policeman that, "Your services are finished." And that innocent boy, he is not wrong. If you are pissing here, who are supposed to prevent people, I said, "I saw him with his gun pissing here." So I said, "Perhaps this is perfectly okay. And I am new anyway, I don't know much." And the policeman could not deny it. There was no way to deny. I said, "If you were not pissing, you can deny it. But that simply means that you were not here. You were not on duty. Somebody else has pissed. Either way, you are finished." When he was thrown out of service, when we came out, he said, "Just listen, how did you manage that? Because that second place You know that I was not pissing. I said, I know, you know. But that does not help. The question is the administrator. He does not know. And you were in every way caught. Either you were not on duty, somebody else had pissed there, or if you were on duty, then you had pissed. But he said, how it happened? Perhaps when we were inside, somebody has done it. I said, to be true to you, now that you are finished, you are no more a policeman. And I feel pity for you. I had to do both the things. Before we left, you were not observant enough that I had moved 2 feet. He said, yes, I remember. You had moved and I was thinking why you have moved. Now I know. But that administrator won't let me even inside the house. He is a very strict man. I said, he may be a strict man, but he has become a friend to me. And he remained a friend to me for 6 months. And I did every kind of thing in that hospital. But whenever I was brought to him, he said, this boy is innocent. From the very first day, I know this boy is innocent, and unnecessarily people are harassing him. For all kinds of things, people are harassing him. Somebody else does, and he is being caught. And I know the reason, because he is innocent, simple. From a small village, he knows nothing about the city and the cunningness of the city and the all kinds of ruffians. So you go on, get hold of him. He has become the target. And I will stand before him very peacefully. He remained a friend to me all those 6 months, only just because of that one case in which the policeman was thrown out. But to me it was a simple case of provocation. God could not see a simple thing, that to these innocent Adam and Eve, he is giving a challenge. These uncorrupted souls, utterly innocent, he is putting the seed of corruption. But to save him, the priests have managed the serpent to come in. And they have thrown the whole responsibility on the serpent, that he is the sole cause of man's original fall. But I don't see him as the original cause. If anything, he is the original incentive to man's growth. He is the original rebel. And what he said to Adam and Eve is the beginning of a true religion. Not what God said. That is the beginning of society, not religion. In the East, serpent is worshipped as the wisest animal in the world. And I think that is far better. If serpent really did this, then he is certainly the wisest animal in the world. He saved man from an eternal slavery, ignorance, stupidity. This is not the original fall. This is the original rise. You are asking me how to save humanity from falling even further. Humanity has never been falling. What has been happening that all the religious dogmas sooner or later become small and cannot contain man. Man goes on growing, dogmas don't grow, doctrines don't grow. The doctrines remain the same and the man outgrows them. The priest clings to the doctrine. That is his heritage, his power, tradition, ancient wisdom. He clings to it. Now, what to say about the man who goes on outgrowing all those doctrines? Certainly, to the priest, this is a continuous fall. Man is falling. Just take few examples and you will understand how doctrines are bound to be rigid, static, dead. Man is alive. You cannot hold him into something which does not grow with him. He will break all those prisons. He will shatter all those chains. For example, in Jainism, the Jaina monk is not supposed to use shoes for the simple reason because in those days shoes were made only of leather. And leather comes from animals, animals are killed. It is a symbol of violence. Mahavira wanted his followers not to be in any way, directly or indirectly, involved in violence. He prevented that no body should use shoes. He was not aware that one day the shoes will be available of rubber, which involves no violence. Shoes will be available of synthetic leather, which involves no violence. Shoes will be available of clothes, which involve no violence. He was not aware. So it indicates two things. The claim of the jainas that he is omniscient is nonsense. He knew nothing of synthetic leather. He cannot be omniscient. Secondly, now 25 centuries have passed. Jaina monks, nuns are still walking barefooted in the dusty roads in hot weather in a country like India. Their feet you should see. Tears will come to your eyes. Their feet are all broken as when for 2-3 years rains don't come and the earth breaks. And blood is oozing out of those wounds. Still they have to go on walking. They cannot use a vehicle. Because in those days again, a vehicle meant horse driven, bullocks driven, and that was violence. And I can understand that it is violence. Who you are to force poor animals to pull your vehicles and to pull you. But he was not aware that there will be cars which will not be pulled by horses but will have horse power. Without horses, there will be trains, electrical vehicles. He was not aware of that. That there will be aeroplanes with the least possibility of violence. Even walking, you will do more violence because it is not only that when you kill an elephant, then it is violence. According to Jainism, the soul has the same status in the ant, smallest ant, and the biggest elephant. Only the bodies are different, but the souls are the same. So when you are walking on the road, you may be killing many insects. Not only insects, even when you are breathing, you are killing very small living cells in the air just by your hot air coming out of your nose, your mouth, they are being killed. Perhaps for the Jaina monk and nun, the aeroplane is the most non-violent vehicle. When I suggested it to Jaina monks, they said, "What are you saying? If somebody hears it, we will be thrown out, expelled." Just I could convince one Jaina monk. And certainly he was expelled. He was a little stupid. we both were staying in one temple, and I told him that you unnecessarily walk 10 miles every day from this place to the city. While car comes for me, you can go with me. He said, but if anybody sees, I said, we can always manage. He used to have a bamboo mat. I said, you put bamboo mat on the sofa in the car and sit on the bamboo mat. He said, what that will do? I said, you can simply say that I am sitting on a bamboo mat. I am not concerned with the car or anything. He said, this is perfectly right. Because if I am sitting on the bamboo mat and somebody pulls my bamboo mat, what can I do? I said, that's right, you just sit on the bamboo mat. I took him in the car. And when we reached the place where there was a meeting in which I and he both were going to speak, and when they saw him sitting, and I asked somebody to come and pull the bamboo mat out, him sitting on top of it, they said, what is all this? I said, you first pull him out, because he has nothing to do with the car. He is simply sitting on his bamboo mat. I have pushed his bamboo mat and him in the car. Now we have to take him out. And I had told him that you simply sit with your eyes closed. See, he is a very meditative person. And don't disturb him, just pull his... They pulled, but they were very angry that this... We have never heard a Jaina monk sitting in a car. And we know perfectly well that this is not any meditative monk. This is for the first time we have seen him sitting with closed eyes. He is not very erudite either, scholarly or anything. He knew only 3 speeches. And he used to ask me which one will be the right, so I used to make the sign of 1, 2, 3, that will do. So whichever finger I raised first, he will do the first speech. And I always manage to let him deliver the wrong speech, which was not supposed in that audience, but he depended on my finger. He was a little stupid. Finally, they expelled him just because he sat in the car. While I was there, they could not, because I argued for him that he has nothing to do with it. You can expel me, but you cannot, because I am not your monk. I don't belong to anybody. So nobody in the whole world can expel me. But you can expel, you can enjoy expelling, you can expel me. But he is absolutely innocent. So in front of me they could not do anything, but the moment I left, the next day they expelled him. They took away all his symbols of Jaina monk. Only after 5-7 years passed, I met him in Lucknow. And what a great coincidence. He was driving a taxi. He had become a taxi driver. That's how I met him on the railway station, because I had to get down there. And go to a hotel and wait at least 8 hours. Then my next train was to come, which will lead me to the place where I was going. So in Lucknow I had no work and I had not informed anybody, so I could just rest 8 hours. By chance I called the taxi and he came. And I said, "What, you are driving a taxi?" He said, "It is all your doing." But I think this is perfectly logical, from car to car, and from the back seat to the front seat. This is what evolution is. And at that time you were even afraid to sit down. Now you are driving. You go on ahead. Soon you will be a pilot. Someday I will meet you in the air. He said, "Don't joke with me." "I have been so angry with you." "But seeing you, all my anger has gone." "You are such a nice person. But why you did that to me?" I said, "I took you out of that bondage. Now you can go to the cinema. You can smoke cigarettes. You can do everything that you do." He said, "I'm doing." "Yes, that is true," he said, "that you have made me free. I was a slave of those people. I could not move even without their permission. Now I don't care a bit about anybody. I earn my living and I live the way I want to live. If you could help all other Jaina monks also." I said, "I try my best." "But the followers always are surrounding them, protecting them, insisting them that they should not talk with me. Even talk is dangerous because this man may put some idea in your mind. All the religions are afraid of thinking, afraid of raising questions, afraid of doubt, afraid of disobedience. And stuck centuries back for the simple reason because these things were not available. Those people who were making those rules had no idea what future is going to be. Hence, all the religions are agreed that man is continuously falling because he is not following the scriptures, not following the doctrines, not following the messiahs, the prophets. But I don't see that man is falling. In fact, man's sensitivity has grown, his intelligence has grown, his life span has grown. He he is more capable now of getting rid of his slavery and patterns of his slavery. He is courageous enough to doubt, to question, to inquire. This is not fall. This is the beginning of a true religion spreading. Soon it can become a wildfire. But to the priest, certainly it is a fall. Everything is a fall, because it is not according to their scriptures. Do you know, in India, just 100 years before, nobody was allowed to go to foreign countries for the simple reason because in the foreign countries you will be mixing with people who cannot be accepted as human beings. They are below human beings. In India, they have the worst class of human beings they call untouchables. They cannot be touched. If you touch them, you have to take a shower and cleanse yourself. In foreign countries, people are even farther down than the untouchables. For them, they had a special word, malechhas. It is very difficult to translate that word. It means something so ugly, so obscene, so dirty, that it creates nausea in you. That will be the full meaning of the word malecha. People whose contact will create nausea in you, a sickness in you. Even when Gandhi went to study to England, the mother of Mahatma Gandhi had taken 3 oaths from him. One, that he will not look at any woman with lustful eyes. Very difficult thing. Because by the time you become aware that you have been looking with lustful eyes, you have already looked. I don't think Gandhi had followed that, could not follow. It is impossible to follow. He tried his best. Second, you should not eat meat. And he was in such a trouble, because now in London you can find vegetarian restaurants. Health food is now in fashion. But when Gandhi had gone to study, there was no vegetarian food available. He had to live just on fruits, bread, butter, milk. He was almost starving. He will not mix with people because those people are all mlechhas. And of course, he was so much afraid of women that who knows, just like a breeze, lust comes to the eyes. It is not something that it knocks on your door, I am coming. You see a beautiful woman and suddenly you feel she is beautiful, and that's enough. Just to say she is beautiful means you have already looked with lustful eyes. Otherwise, what business it is for you to judge whether she is beautiful or ugly? In fact, if you go deep down in your judgments, you will see by the moment you say that someone is beautiful, deep down you want to possess. When you say somebody is ugly, deep down you don't want to have anything to do with that person. Your ugly, your beauty are really your desires, far are against. So he was continuously afraid of women remaining confined in his room, because in Europe there were all over women. How can you avoid? And third, that you should not change your religion. The first trouble arose in Alexandria. Their ship was to wait there for 3 days for loading, unloading cargo, and all people who were on the ship who had become friendly to him, they were all Indians. So they told him, just what is the point sitting here for 3 days? The nights in Alexandria are beautiful. But he didn't understand the meaning that nights in Alexandria are beautiful. In that way, he was a simpleton. He had never heard the name of the famous book Arabian Nights. Otherwise he would have understood. Alexandria is very close to Arabia, and those are Arabian Nights. So he said, okay, if nights are beautiful, I am coming. But he was not aware where he is going. They took him into a beautiful house. He said, but where we are going? He said, to beautiful nights, those friends said. And it was a prostitute's house. And he was so sobbed that he lost his voice. He could not say that I don't want to go in. He could not say that I want to go back to the ship. For two reasons. One, that these people will think that I am impotent or something. Secondly, he was not able to speak. For the first time he found that his throat is choked. Those people just dragged him. He said, just he is new, nothing to be worried. And he went with them. They pushed him into a prostitute's room and closed the door. The prostitute was also a little puzzled seeing this man trembling, perspiring. She completely forgot that he is a customer. She just made him sit. He won't sit on her bed, but she forced. She said, you are not in a position to stand, you will fall down, you are shaking so much, you just sit. He could not say that he cannot sit on a prostitute's bed. What my mother will say. I have not looked yet. He was talking to his mother inside. I have not yet looked with lustful eyes. This is just an accident. Those idiots have forced me here. The woman understood that it seems he has been forced. She said, don't be worried. I am also a human being. What do you want? Simply say to me, I will do that. But he could not say anything. So the woman said, it is very difficult now. How? You don't speak? He said, I just... So she said, you please write. He had to write on paper that I have been unnecessarily forced here. I don't want... I simply want to go and I look at you as my sister. She said, that's perfectly okay, don't be worried. She opened the door. She said, do you have money enough to go to the ship? Or should I come with you to leave, because Alexandria in the middle of night is dangerous. He said, no. Now he was able to speak for the first time, seeing that a prostitute is not some dangerous animal. She behaved more humanly than any woman has behaved ever with him. She offered him food. He said, no, I cannot eat. I'm okay. She offered water. He won't to drink water from a prostitute's house. As if water also becomes dirty because it is in prostitute's house. In India, that happens. In Indian stations, you will find people shouting, Hindu water, Mohammedan water. Water, Hindu, Mohammedan. And Jainas, of course, don't drink either the Hindu water or the Mohammedan water. They carry their own water, Jaina water. Because they are in such a minority that on stations you won't find Jaina water. So they have to carry their own water. But he thanked the woman, and in his autobiography he wrote about that woman and about the whole incident, that how cowardly I was. I could not even speak, could not even say no. Now these three things kept him a slave in England, where he could have been free. He could have looked into many aspects of life which were not available in India. But it was impossible because those three oaths were so binding. He did not make friends he did not go to any meetings, sermons. He simply kept himself with his books and prayed to God, somehow finish my course so I can be back in India. Now, such a person cannot become a great legal expert. He examined, his examination was good, he passed. But when he came to India, in his first case, when he went to the court, again the same thing happened as it had happened in the prostitute's house. He simply said, "My Lord," and that was all. People waited a few minutes, then again he said, "My Lord," and he was so trembling that the justice said, "You take him and let him relax." And that was his first and last case in India, an Indian court. Then he never dared to take any case, because if just after Mala you stop, that does not make sense. And the reason was simply that he had no experience of meeting people, talking with people, conversing with people. He has become almost an isolated monk who has lived in a far away monastery alone, and then had been brought again to Bombay, where he was not at all at ease. And this man became one of the greatest leaders of the world. In this world, things work very strangely. Because he could not go to the court, he accepted an offer from a Mohammedan friendly family. They had business in South Africa and they needed a legal advisor. He was not to go to the court. He has just to advise the advocate there to assist him to understand the whole situation of the business in India and in Africa. So he was just an assistant to the advocate. He was not going to court directly. For this purpose, he went to Africa. But on the way, two accidents happened, which changed not only his life, but the whole Indian history, and perhaps made an impact on the whole world. One was that a friend who had come to leave him on the ship presented him a book, Unto This Last, a book which transformed his whole life. It is a simple book and a small book. It professes unto this last means the poorest one. We should consider the poorest one first. And that became his whole philosophy of life. The poorest should be considered first. And in South Africa, while traveling in a first class, one Englishman entered and he said to him that you get out because no Indian can travel in a first class. Gandhi said, but I have a first class ticket. The question is not whether I am an Indian or an European. The question whether I have a first class ticket or not. Nowhere it is written that who can travel, whoever has first class ticket can travel. But that Englishman was not going to listen. He pulled the chain, threw his things out, and he was a thin and weak man. He threw him out also on the platform and told him that now you travel first class. The whole night he remained on that small station's platform. The station master told him that you unnecessarily got into trouble. You should have got down. You seem to be new here. Indians cannot travel. It is not a law. But this is how things are. But the whole night went into a turmoil. It became the very seed of his revolt against British Empire. That night he decided that this empire has to end. He lived many years in Africa and there he learned the whole art of fighting non-violently. And when he came to India in 1920s, he was perfectly trained leader of non-violent revolution. And he immediately took over the whole country, for the simple reason because he was conventional, traditional, religious, nobody could say that he is not a sage. Because he was following rules of 5,000 years before, laid down 5,000 years before. In fact, he was preaching that we should turn the clock backwards and we should move to the days of Manu, 5,000 years back. To him, the greatest and the latest invention was the spinning wheel. After that, no science. Science work is finished with the spinning wheel. Of course, he became the leader of those people who are not contemporaries. You are asking me how to save humanity. From whom? I will say from Mahatma Gandhi and peoples like him, yes, save humanity. Save it from the popes, Shankaracharyas, imams. Save it from Jesus Christ, Mahavira, Gautam Buddha, save it. But I know your question. Is not to save it from Jesus Christ. You are asking just the opposite. You are asking me how to save it for Jesus Christ, not from Jesus Christ. But why? And have you tried to think it? Are you saved? Can you say that you have come to the point beyond which there is no growth? Can you say that you are utterly contented, that you don't need even a single moment to live more, because there is nothing left for you? Are you saved from all anxiety, anguish, misery, suffering, anger, jealousy? Are you saved from your own ego? If you are not saved from all this rubbish hanging around you, all this poison into your being, you have some nerve to ask how to save humanity? And who are we to save humanity? On what authority? I can never conceive myself as a savior, as a messiah, because these are all ego trips. Who I am to save you? If I can save myself, that is more than enough. But it is a strange world. People are drowning themselves into shit and crying loudly, save humanity. From whom? From you? It is psychologically understandable. You start all these ideas of redeeming, saving, helping, serving, just to do one thing, to escape from yourself. You don't want to face yourself. You don't want to see where you are, what you are. The best way is start saving humanity. So you will be so much involved, engaged, occupied, worried about great problems that your own problems will look negligible. Perhaps you may forget all about them. This is a very psychological device, but very poisonous. You want somehow to be as far away from yourself as possible. So you need not see the wounds which are hurting. The best way is serve. I used to go to speak in Rotary clubs, and on their desk they have their motto, "We serve." And that was enough to trigger me. Then what nonsense is this? Whom do you serve? And why should you serve? Who are you to serve? But Rotarians all over the world believe in service. Just believe. And once in a while they do little things very clever. The Rotarians collect all the medicines which are left in your house unused because the sick person is no more sick, half the bottle is left, what you are going to do with it? Have some bank account in the other world. Give it to the Rotary Club. You are not losing anything, you are going to throw it anyway. What you are going to do that with that medicine? Those tablets, injections, or anything that are left, you just give it to the Rotary Club. Rotary Club collects all kinds of medicines from everybody. And Rotary Club has all top people of the city. It is a prestigious thing to be a member of a Rotary Club, to be a Rotarian. Because only the top men in a certain profession, only one professor will be a Rotarian, only one doctor will be a Rotarian, only one engineer will be a Rotarian, only one from every profession, vocation. So the doctor who is the Rotarian, he will distribute those medicines to poor people. Great service. The doctor takes his fee and finds out from this junk that they have collected that what medicine may be in some way useful. He is doing great service because at least he is giving this much time in finding from the junk the medicine. We serve. And then he feels great inside that he is doing something of immense value. One man has been opening in India schools for Aboriginal children. His whole life, he is a follower of Gandhi. Just by chance, he met me because I had gone into that Aboriginal tribe. I was studying those Aboriginals from every view because they are living examples of days when man was not so much burdened with all kinds of morality, religion, civilization, culture, etiquette, manners. They are simple, innocent, still wild, fresh. This man was going and collecting money from cities and opening schools, bringing teachers. Just by the way he met me there, I said, "What are you doing? You think you are doing great service to these people?" He said, "Of course." So arrogantly he said, "Of course." I said, "You are not aware of what you are doing. These schools exist in the cities better than these. What help they have provided to human beings. And if those schools cannot provide, and colleges and universities cannot provide any help to humanity, what do you think these small schools are going to help these poor Aboriginals? All that you will do, you will destroy their originality. All that you will do, you will destroy their primitive wildness. They are still free. Your schools will create nothing but trouble for them." The man was shocked. But he waited for a few seconds and then said, "Perhaps you are right, because once in a while I have been thinking that these schools and colleges and universities exist in a far wider scale all over the world. What my small schools can do?" But then I thought it was Gandhi's order to me to go to Aboriginals and open schools. So I am following my master's order. I said, "If your master was an idiot, that does not mean that you have to continue following the order. Now, stop, I order you." And I tell you why you have been doing all this, just to escape from your own suffering, your own misery. You are a miserable man. Anybody can see from your face. You have never loved anybody. You have never been loved by anybody. He said, "How you manage to infer that?" "Because it is true. I was orphan. Nobody loved me. And I have been brought up in Gandhi's ashram, where love was only talked in the prayers. Otherwise, love was not a thing to be practiced. There was a strict discipline. a kind of regimentation. So nobody has ever loved me, that's true. And you are right, I have never loved anybody, because in Gandhi's ashram, it was impossible to fall in love. That was the greatest crime. And I was one of those whom Gandhi has praised, because I never fell into his eyes. Even his own sons betrayed him. Devadas, his son, fell in love with Rajagopalachari's daughter. And then he was expelled from the ashram. They got married. Gandhi's own personal secretary, Pyarelal, fell in love with a woman and kept the love affair secret for years. When it was exposed, it was a scandal, great scandal. And I said, what nonsense. But Gandhi's personal secretary, that means what about others? And this man was praised because he never came in contact with any woman. And Gandhi sent him to the Aboriginal tribes. And he has been doing what the master has said. But he said to me, you have disturbed me. Perhaps it is true. I am just trying to escape from myself, from my wounds, from my own anguish. So all these people who become interested in serving humanity, in the first place are very egoist. They are thinking themselves as saviors. In the second place are very sick. They are trying to forget their sickness. And in the third place, whatever they will do is going to help man become worse than he is. Because they are sick and blind, and they are trying to lead people. And when blind people lead, then you can be certain sooner or later the whole lot is going to fall into a well. No, I am not interested in saving anybody. In fact, nobody needs saving. Everybody is perfectly okay as he is. Everybody is what he has chosen to be. Now, who am I to disturb him? All that I can do is, I can say about myself, what has happened to me. I can tell my story. Perhaps from that story he may get an insight, a direction. Perhaps from that a door opens up. But I am not doing anything. I am simply sharing my own experience. It is not service. I am enjoying it, so it is not service. Remember it. A servant has to be very long face and very serious. He is doing such a great work. He is carrying the Himalayas on his shoulders, the whole burden of the world. I am not carrying anything, no burden of the world, no burden of anybody. And I am not doing any serious job. I am just enjoying telling you about my experience. To share it is a joy in itself. If something reaches to you, thank God. Who does not exist? Don't thank me, because I exist.
The responses to sutras and voice recording on this audio format are the copyright of Osho International Foundation. Copyright dates 1953 through 2003. All rights reserved. Reproduction in any media is prohibited.